This morning, what I have mentioned in Tibetan, I will take this time to briefly share this to you in English. I'm telling this morning that from time to time, it is very important to remind us most basic things. Because as a Buddhist and a Vajrayana Buddhist, we take so many things for granted. Because they are so basic and we know them so well at one time. So we go through lots of other things which are more profound and deep. So from time to time it is ironic, but it happens that the most basic things we forget. And that way even most sacred things does not seem to mean very much. Because the very foundation is forgotten. So I hope this will be a reminder. As a Buddhist, we have to know first thing, what is Buddha? If we don't know what is Buddha, how can we be Buddhist? Buddha is not someone who came from somewhere else and who is another species and another kind of being. Buddha was just like us, just like each one of us. And he developed bodhicitta. And he practiced bodhicitta. And through that gradually, he reached the highest essence of dharma, which is much different from his own essence, and which is none other than essence of everything. And he became what he always was. And he was free. He had no limitation. He is enlightened. He is embodiment of wisdom, compassion, everything. Limitless. So that is Buddha. And the connection and relevance between Buddha and us is very simple. We are unenlightened Buddha, and Buddha is enlightened sentient being. That is the difference. That is the connection. We are unenlightened Buddha, and Buddha is enlightened sentient being. So that is the first thing. And the Dharma. Dharma, the word Dharma in Sanskrit, and the word chu in Tibetan covers everything. So therefore, I have to mention specifically Buddhist Dharma. Because everything is Dharma. For us, everything. For example, Christian Dharma, Hindu Dharma, everything is Dharma. Now, I have no authority over other Dharmas. Because I am not transmitted with any of the other Dharma. The Buddhist Dharma, essence of the Buddhist Dharma, according to the Vajrayana, it is not the thought of the Prince Dharma. It is not the intelligent discovery of the Prince Dharma, Buddha Shakyamuni. It is the manifestation of the original aspiration. When Prince Dharma, many eons back, took the bodhicitta, saying that I wish to reach Buddhahood for the benefit of all sentient beings to reach Buddhahood, because he was inspired by a Buddha of that time, another universe, another time. And that inspiration and aspiration continued, and when that became accomplished, then he became Buddha. So all the Dharma manifests from the Buddha. All Dharma manifests from the Buddha according to the recipient of the Dharma. For example, with Tantra, Tantra, Mantra, Mandala. So the Tantra, the entire philosophy, etc., text, etc., text, etc., and Mantra, the sound, recitation, syllable, etc., and Mandala, the deity and the environment, manifestation. They all Dharma. They are all part of each other. It is not that Buddha sat down and drew the mandala like an expert architect and engineer and then drew all the deities and sculpted them like master sculpts person and created the entire thing. Not like that. Buddha manifested that way, teaching, the deity, the mantra, the everything at the same time. So that is the Dharma. So from most basic dharma of 10 virtues and 10 non-virtues to the highest dharma of the sabbhavika kaya. Everything manifested that way. That is dharma. Now, sangha, of course, is the continuation of the lineage of dharma comes from the sangha. Otherwise, dharma will end up in books, collecting dust, eaten by bookworms, words are missing, and then we have to make research to find out what those missing words were. We can't ask bookworms, what words did you eat? Therefore, we have to research and figure out. And that does not mean anything. Therefore, dharma, by definition, is tied together inseparably with the sangha, because sangha is the lineage. If there's no lineage, then sangha is a bunch of people wearing different robes and shaved head and all that sort of thing. And sangha, by definition, is those who hold the lineage of the dharma. And those whose lineage is realized lineage is sacred sangha. And those whose lineage is just ordinary understanding and transmission, we call that ordinary sangha. Susitjewa Gendun and Pakpa Gendun in Tibetan. Susitjewa means ordinary, and Pakpa means actually a saint or sacred or extraordinary. And now this way you understand what is Buddha, what is Dharma, what is Sangha, what is connection between Buddha and you, and then what is the purpose of the Dharma in a very simple way. And then if you still have a question, why for we have to be enlightened? Why can't we just go on in samsara? Of course, we are doing very well with that. We are quite good at that, actually, go on in samsara. We managed to hang on here for a long, long time. But that is not exactly what we want, whether you admit it or not, because in this entire universe, you cannot find one single sentient being who likes to suffer and who don't like to be happy. That is the evidence. That is the evidence. With that evidence, we are quite clear that sentient beings don't like to suffer and sentient beings like to be happy. And is that possible? It is possible in a kind of temporary stopgap measure. You just have a glimpse of happiness here, a glimpse of happiness there. But that is counterproductive, actually, because that kind of happiness gives you so much greed and so much desperation to have it again, experience it again, hold on to it, and afraid of losing it, and also dissatisfied with that, and then wanting to have greater happiness. So that way there's no end to it. That is why world is like the way it is today. Nobody wanted our humanity to end up like this, but it happened to be like this because of exactly this reason. Now, therefore, the aggressive, greedy way of trying to achieve happiness, you cannot succeed. Because that is not the nature of happiness. That is not the nature of Buddha. That is not the nature of truth. That is not the nature of our essence. One has to be liberated. One has to be transformed. You cannot force. You cannot forge. Forging, pretending, does not work. Therefore, we have to be truly free from suffering. We have to be truly attain the limitless joy, which is the definition, one of the definition of Buddha. Stainless, limitless, non-dualistic, non-triplicity, ultimate, primordial joy, eternal, which is ever-present, but one has to realize it and recognize all kind of philosophy, all kind of science, cognitive or this or that. They all try to look into it and they might even see it, but it doesn't really do much. It will be like this. If you have compassion, if you have wisdom, you will be at peace. And that wisdom and that compassion is your essence. And everybody have that. And we all have that as our essence. Just after saying that, then asking for the assistance to bring a glass of wine, because I want to relax. So So where did that essence go? You know? And then right after saying that, have a break and walk into the balcony. When the audience went out to relax themselves, you go to the balcony and smoking cigarettes to relax. So that when the audience come back, you will be able to talk more with lot of energy. So this way, knowing, understanding, it's good. It's good. Better than not knowing, better than not understanding, but it doesn't do very much. One has to implement it and practice it. And so, therefore, practice of Dharma, very important. And to be free from suffering of samsara is very important, because that is what we want. We can never be free from suffering any other way than except by realizing the limitless, primordial, joy eternal essence of each and every one of us. Ultimate emptiness, ultimate bodhicitta, primordial joy eternal, primordial wisdom, so many names. And that, without realizing that, we can never be free from suffering. So that is why. And the kind of suffering, you know, human suffering, we know. Animal suffering, we know. And God suffering, asura's suffering, hungry ghost suffering, suffering of the hell, we don't know, because we don't see them. So, from human suffering and the animal suffering, human suffering, we don't have to discuss very much, because we know. But animal suffering, we see, you know, the big animals, for example, who are bred for meat, and we are sometimes become so unwise, become so unwise and so ignorant, so that we forget that they have suffering. We forget that. And as a result of that, I like to give you one example. People who, not all, but many people who make big animal production business, some of them use very, very creative, cruel methods to yield maximum profit from the meat, for example. So, when they sell the animals meat, they wanted to have maximum kilo, because each kilo will cost more money, so they can make more money. And how did they do that? Animals like big animals and sheep and all of them, they have to regurgitate their food and chew it again. So by doing that, they will lose weight because they are digesting it. So to prevent that, before slaughter, they will insert a red iron rod through their top of their nose, all the way through their mouth and tongue and lower jaw, and bend it under their cheek so that their mouth will be totally locked closed. So they cannot re-chew, they cannot regurgitate, one thing. And they do it with hot iron rod because it doesn't bleed. And second thing they do is, all days they beat these animals to make them walk faster, to get to the slaughterhouse fast, within days instead of weeks and months. But then these days in trucks. So in trucks, the big animals, you cannot fit so many because they have four legs. So in order to fit more animals, they use huge wooden hammer which is wrapped with sponge so that it does not break the skin but break the bone. So they use them to break every one of their legs so that they can stack many of these animals, maximum amount of animals in one truck, and they carry them to the slaughterhouse without losing weight, and that way they can make maximum profit. And I can't say these people are intentionally cruel, but out of ignorance, who like to hurt sentient beings and enjoy it? I don't think they're enjoying it, but they just don't think about it because they don't know. And through Dharma, at least we will know. So, this way, why all sentient beings have to be free from suffering, it is very clear. And then, stop, get, measure kind of free from suffering is not the answer. Because you, in order to overcome one suffering, you create another suffering. I give you a very clear example. Even among Dharma followers, my own example, if I spend more time with one disciple and teach them more Dharma, then other disciples feel that why didn't he teach me? Why didn't he spend that much time with me? So that way, there is kind of suffering right there. I'm not complaining. I'm not complaining type. People who complain, I consider them cowards. Because you have to do what you have to do honestly. And it works good. It doesn't work, then we have to accept it. And we have to deal with it. Complaining and making trouble is no good. It does not solve anything. It creates more. Anyway, that is how I think. I could be wrong. Okay? But anyway, this way, then it becomes very clear why all mother sentient beings have to be free from suffering. And the only way to free them from suffering is through making them realize their primordial essence and their primordial joy eternal and mature their primordial wisdom. That is the only way. So I want you to, from time to time, remind myself of this kind of very basic things, and I'm also reminding you of the same thing. And I hope this is beneficial for all of you.